I am recording Wilma Cook of Athabasca, Alberta, on March 4th, 2018. My name is Wendy Chanel, and I am interviewing Wilma Cook on behalf of the Athabasca United Church Seniors Memory Project. Hello, Wilma. Will you please state your name and the date?
My name is Wilma Catherine Cook, and the date is May the 4th, 2018.
March.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm welcoming this opportunity because I've had a wonderful time reliving my childhood in trying to decide what to talk about. My family originally came to Athabasca in 1911. My grandparents, George and Kate Lewis, came from North Sydney, Nova Scotia. My grandfather had a sailing, a sailboat that he used to, it was a large one, he used to travel down to the British West Indies and bring goods back to Nova Scotia for trade. As I grew older and learned more about history, I suspect that the reason that he stopped doing this is about the time that the steamships came in, and they were so much more efficient than sailboats, that the sailing ships, that they were no longer used for the trade. So anyway, my granddad and grandmother came to Athabasca with 8 children. I think one of them may have been born after they got here, but anyway, they had a large family. They came by rail to Edmonton, and there was no railroad service to Athabasca at that time. They came by wagon up the old Collington Highway with all their goods and all their children.
Goodness, eh?
My mother was 5 years old at the time, and she had a very interesting life. Granddad and the neighbors built the small church and the school, which is now being used as a community room for the South Athabasca. They have a lot of activities there. And anyway, that's where my mom and her brothers and sisters went to school. She went to her family. I'll just mention them because there's quite a few of them that lived in the Athabasca area. Vesta was the oldest. Sim Lewis was, I believe, next. I'm not quite sure if these are in the right order. Sim, Walton, Ray, Margaret, Hazel, Catherine, and Grace. Now, Sim's picture hangs outside the brick school and the brick building on Main Street that's now used for a hairdresser. He was injured in the First World War, lost a leg, and had been gassed, and he got a job as a telephone operator, which was brand new practically at the end of the war, and he spent the rest of his life working in the telephone office and the telephone exchange, and was well known in the district. Wall, the next son, lived in Athabasca and died, lived all his life here, and he also was in the First World War, but I don't believe he had any injuries at all. The next son was Ray, and he was in the First World War, and I'm not sure what he did when I was a very young child, but he had, when I was in my teens, I remember he was the manager of the Union Hotel, and which was a very nice building in those days, much nicer than it is now.
Yeah.
Margaret married Jane, her last married name was James. I can't remember my uncle's name. And there's a lot of the James family living in the Athabasca area. Hazel married Bill Minns, and again, there's lots of Minnses in the area.
Yeah.
My mother, and I'll talk about her later, and but the youngest daughter was Grace Conquest. She married a fellow who and died shortly after World War II. He was in a hunting accident. And their family have all moved away. My mother went to school at South Athabasca, and my one aunt, Alva, was married to Mike Thorne, who was an RCMP officer that was with the RCMP, the Royal Northwest Mounted Police in those days.
Yeah.
And there's lots of stories. He was stationed in the area from Fort McMurray. He covered all the northern part of Athabasca, and I often see stories of him. He was his daughter was honored when they had the RCMP ride here because of the ties that they had. Anyway, he was stationed to a remote, and I can't remember the name of the town now, way up Northwest Territories. He had been stationed there just after he and Andy Al got married, and there were no white women there. There was just a school for the native children that was run by the Catholic nuns. No, wasn't
no.
that? It's so long since I've even heard of it, but it's
okay.
Still there, and it's quite, it's growing. I'm sure it's quite different now. But there was no road in or anything, and there were no white people there.
Yeah.
And Andy Al, I didn't want him to go there without a companion, a female companion. So anyway, Mom took one of her, probably grade 11, up there. With the nuns and the native students, and then she came back to Athabasca, and she went to the brick school for her high school. That was
okay.
The only school they had at the time. She then went to normal school and taught for several years at Rosemont and the school that was what used to be called Nine Mile Corner, just on the way to Baptiste Lake.
Mm-hmm. This is still your mother.
That's my mother.
Yeah.
I was given some checks that were her paychecks that had been in storage for, you know, the cash canceled ones had been in storage for years, and I must take them over to the archives because
yes.
That would be very interesting for them
Absolutely.
To have them.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dad was born in the United States. James Dean Galloway was his name. Galloway was my maiden name. And he came here as a young man, and after several years, he and Mom got married, and she had to quit teaching, of course, because in those days, women weren't allowed to teach if they were married. They had a large family. There were six surviving. I had a brother that died when he was 10 from sugar diabetes, which was very difficult, hard to control in those days. And a sister who died when she was about 3 or 4 months old. She had spinal meningitis. The treatment was not very
No.
good in those days for. Anyway, the six surviving children had, I always say we grew up in the best of times. We had such a wonderful life. Growing up in Athabasca was just so neat. We had chores to do, of course, when we were kids, but you could go outside and play anytime. There was just a standard rule. There was a fire siren that used to ring every noon hour at 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was for population because not everybody had watches in those days like they do now. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, this and we had to make tracks for home at 12 o'clock. But other than that, it was safe to go out and play, and we had all sorts of kid games in the summer, bike riding, and in the winter we used to ski down the hill. I don't know the numbers of the streets. They weren't numbered until I moved back here. In front of where Dr. the Berger's office,
Okay,
that street,
that street
the
there, yeah.
brick is at the bottom. Anyway, that was the best ski hill for kids in the wintertime because before they paved Athabasca, the streets,
Yeah.
the hills were much
Steeper.
steeper.
Yeah.
I learned to drive in Athabasca, and I always say if you can drive in the winter in Athabasca, you can drive anywhere because it was not good. But anyway, that hill was never used in the wintertime. Not many people used their cars in those days. Dad always put ours up on blocks in the garage. We had a garage at our house,
For the winter, he
put
blocked
the
it.
battery down in the basement, people walked everywhere. It was a little smaller than the area that it covers, so it wasn't that much of a problem. But that was a wonderful ski hill. I remember one winter I was going to make myself a little ski jump because I'd heard about ski jumping, and I took the snow and packed it down so that I had a little sort of jump, and I skied on that for a while and fell off and knocked the wind out of myself. I was a little kid. And I was scared to death. I thought I was dying, and there was nobody around. Nobody. I thought I'm going to just lie here and die. Anyway, that's one of my miserable memories of when I grew up. We walked everywhere we went, adults and children. We didn't use cars the way we did now. And I remember the sidewalks were wooden.
Really?
And the town built new wood sidewalks just about the time I was going to school, and it was really neat.
How many kids were in school in any grade you were in?
The rooms, there were quite a few, because when I started grade one, the only school was a brick school, and there were six rooms there, because they had two in the basement, and then two on each
Each
floor,
floor.
three, so there were three floors. So there were two classes in each room. And that's interesting because that was the only school until I think it was the end of the war because they built an annex, which is now the library and the
Pottery
and
Club.
yeah, and that was either that was originally two rooms with a typing room in between because they were now offering
Typing.
typing classes. But I think we must have had two room then, because I think I was in about grade 6 or 7 when we moved into that new school. That was the lowest grade there, and I know there was grade 9 there because they're the ones that had the typing class, not the younger grades. So it had to have been about 1945, I think, because we were just at the age where we were so thought it was so romantic. My teacher was Jessie Rawlings, who's been here. She was born here, I think.
Okay.
And anyway, she had married Roy Rawlings. And he had either been in the war, he'd been a soldier when they got married, but he, or he, I think he was already in the services and had left. Anyway, all us girls thought this was so romantic. Mrs. Rawlings' husband was coming home. I still remember that.
Yeah.
So that was the first addition they had to the school. And when I It was they built an addition when I was still. I think it was about a year or so after I left the school, and it was a shop building. That's all it was over, like the next block over and down there. The kids would. It was close enough But that was all the school we had in those days.
That little building that's the Second Chance School now, I think.
I'm not sure if it, that's about the area it was, but it seemed to me it was a bigger building because it was two stories.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, that was that school was, I always think was interesting because my mother said that there was, her name was, her initials were scratched in the top southwest corner, the top floor, in those wonderful windows. It was really a neat school. I liked that. But anyway, she said that her boyfriend she'd had had carved her initials there. She didn't tell me that till I was quite a bit out of school.
So you did all your education here in Athabasca?
All my education at that time I did in Athabasca. And before I get on to my... I want to talk about the social life that we had in Athabasca,
yes.
Because there was no such thing as television, and we did have movies. I think once a week there was a movie, and they had a what's now the... I think it's a provincial building on Main Street where they have provincial... And anyway, that used to be a grocery store, Parker's store. And on the second floor, they had a big, like a hall.
Ballroom.
They had chairs there. There was a lot... Athabasca's always been involved in drama. We had... I remember going to... They had live theater in there, and they had, Nancy Appleby used to have dances in there when I was a teenager and older, and the Catholic Church used to have a very, very good drama group, and I remember some of the older plays, but the first one I ever went to see was Lawrence of Arabia, which was a popular play in that was about 1939. I don't think I'd started school yet, but I remember going there with mom and dad and a couple of the old, my older brothers, sisters, and Mr. Ashacker was the telephone. He had the telephone office next, telegraph office next to the telephone, and he was part of the Catholic group, and he was also a bit of a comedian. So he was doing this sort of warm up before the play started, and I can remember him tell. I still remember this joke he told. He said that when you went up to heaven, he said you had to climb this step ladder that was on this back blackboard that went way up to the up through the clouds, and there was this step ladder you had to walk along, climb up. And as you went, you had to write all your sins on this blackboard. And he said, and I was just halfway up, and I met Dean Galloway coming down for more chalk. Well, I just thought that was wonderful. My dad was recognized, that I had no idea what the joke meant. I've always remembered that. That was, I'm 85, so that's 79 years ago. It obviously made an impression on me.
Fabulous memory, too.
Anyway, they had, my goodness, my parents had, everybody had social lives. You visited, much more than we do now. Or you'd have friends in for an evening, and they both played bridge. Mom played in a bridge club that she joined 12 women.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Donahue was one of them, who was the library's named after. She was a dear lady. Anyway, There were three tables, so they had 12 women, and I think when she died, she was still going to it, but I think they still had 10 of the original members, and they would meet every week. They'd take turns at somebody's house, and Mom would bake and bake. It was a big social thing for them.
Special.
But they would also, they might get another couple in some evening. In the wintertime, they'd often have a couple in to play bridge, or they'd be going to somebody's house. We had a curling rink from the time I can remember. Am I talking too much?
No, go ahead. Well, no.
They had a curling rink. The first one was down, probably the street where Bilo's are now. That was just the end of town, really, almost a block over. And then there was the curling rink, and there was a livery stable there, because a lot of the farmers came to town with horses. And anyway, curling was very big in Athabasca, always has been.
Yeah.
And then they built another one. Oh, across from the Anglican Church. There was a skating rink, and because we lived a block, our house was where the Native Friendship Center is now.
Okay.
So in the wintertime, you know, you'd go to bed, and we always had the window open a bit, and you'd hear all the music from the skating rink. I can remember all the Danube waltzes, all the waltzes, Blue Danube, and things like that.
Oh.
Anyway, they had... and there were clubs like Eastern Star and Masons. My dad was on the school board. Mum belonged to Women's Auxiliary. He was also with the volunteer fire department. And that's another memory. I don't know when it happened, but I was still a kid. And the Catholic church burned down. It was a wooden building. And it was about the same size as, it's on the same spot where the present one is. And it was about the same size, and it was middle of the night, probably early morning. I don't know. It was dark anyway, and we heard. You know, there was a lot of commotion with people coming to help and things, but it was wintertime, and that hill was really steep. And all of a sudden, you'd hear clang, clang, and the bell had come off, had fallen from the steeple, which had burned. And it was rolling, and I could still see it, red, just red, 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 and it was rolling down that steep hill, clang, clang, clang. That was interesting, but not terribly important, really. The ski jump, the Schinkinger boys, Kurt and Tony, Tony was the mayor here for a number of years, very... They were a wonderful family, all of them.
Yeah.
And
what time is this when you say years? 19.
Oh, this I was going to school, so it would be. They were both older than I am. Kurt was about my oldest sister's age, so he'd be 4 years older. I don't know. It would have been in the 40s. You see pictures of it maybe in the archives. A real rickety looking thing. Huge thing where the Western Hotel is. I can remember going there. I can't remember that road being there, but there was, because this was the road to Edmonton.
Yeah, it was
all
the time.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you what year, but I would say in the 50s,
okay,
sometime. And it was, you know, these really they Kurt was still going to school.
Yeah.
The other boy and he was the really good one. He'd get up there. It was a huge thing, and they'd get up there just like you see them do on these jumps and go flying down. It was
fun.
Not my thing at all. The summertime was really summers were wonderful here. We had a cottage out at the lake. It wasn't fancy or anything, but we spent a lot of time out there. And Dad liked to go for picnics, and we'd go all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Mom used to try and turn some of them into berry picking things, but Dad worked at, he was the United Grain Growers elevator agent when the elevators were here.
Okay.
And the farm women, or the women that lived in the country in those days, used to make extra money by picking berries and things like that, because money was very scarce.
Mm-hmm.
And if he knew that Mom was planning a berry picking, when the ladies came into the elevator with their husbands, he would usually manage to find the berries that she wanted. He was not a berry picker. I inherited that from him, I'm afraid. That was sort of adult kind of thing. So the ball tournaments were a big thing, and of course where the school is now, the high school
EPC.
that used to be the ballpark up there, and they had little buildings that they used for, well, they'd have sometimes one of the organizations would be selling hot dogs and pop and stuff like, you know, for if it was a particularly if it was a tournament or
Your
something.
kind of
But
canteen.
yeah, and that was always a popular thing to do on a Sunday afternoon, was to go up there. For younger people, we had Teen Town, which had dances just about every Saturday night, supervised, of course, in those days.
Was there a big turnout?
But oh yes, oh yeah, they were very popular, and it was a municipal hall, I think they called it. It was down right next to the river, about where the park is now, the children's park. But it was all wooded around it, 'cause you always had to walk through the cross the railroad track and walk through the trees to get down there. But it had been immigration hall, that's what it was. It had been built, I guess, probably in the teens, when they were encouraging immigrants to come and settle here, and so many of the farmers came from Europe, and they had an immigration hall there for them to live in, and had kept it as sort of a social place. That was before we had the anything else that size. But it was used, and my first husband was a school teacher here, and he'd been in the war for a very short time, but they had air cadets down there. He used to go all the time to help with the air cadets, and used just a sort of a community hall, really. It was the only thing we had for a community hall in those days, and it's gone now. But it was a very nice building. It had hardwood floors and hot and cold running water. It was and this
Nice back in the
big dance
40s.
floor. Yeah. The lake was always one of my favorite spots. When I came back to Athabasca, I had to go to the lake. We bought a house out there,
That's Baptiste Lake.
Baptiste Lake, because it had so many memories there. Oh, they had a church camp there that we used to go to. The Anglican Church had, they built it. It was further down on the, on the, what do they call that district now? They've all got names that it used to. Anyway, it was on the east side of the lake, and there was a few cottages. Where's our Sunset Beach?
Sunset
Further
Beach.
down from Sunset Beach, there was I think there were about 8 or 10 cottages is all there were along that part. There was a few over on the other side, but the road ended at the end of these cottages, and it was just a trail really into the, oh, for about probably half a mile before you could get to the camp. This was after the war, and there were a lot of English girls that would come over here to work in the church, and they had a van that, I guess probably the diocese had a this van, and they would go off into the wilderness, where there were no churches and sort of thing, and they would spend their summer doing that. And they sort of supervised the camp too. That was fun. I actually taught swimming there 1 year, the last year I went. It was
What was the population of Baptiste Lake back then?
Baptiste Lake? Oh gosh, it really hadn't grown. It was still probably only the same 8 or 10 cottages. There might be a few more. Not at all like it is now. No. There was a few there, and then a few over by where Applebee's is. They had a house there, and they had a little, They had a nice beach, and they had a pier in there. And Nancy had set up a little sort of coffee shop where she had, well, she'd have donuts and, or hot dogs and pop and coffee and things like that for sale for a Sunday. So that was really the only public beach at the time. But we had the cabin, and we had wonderful times out there. That's pretty well what we did for entertainment that I can think of. We always were busy, always had something to do. You could go anywhere, you know, with children, it was never a problem. We wanted to. My brother Dan, who was 10 years younger than me, he'd often he just roamed. I can't believe as an adult some of the stories he'd tell about how the, you know, the whole area was their playground, and they used to do, those kids used to do anything. We were a little more tame. My own family, my brothers and sisters. Norma was my oldest sister, and she worked at the creamery, and then after she got married, they left, and of course they came back all the time, but she never came back to Athabasca to live. She passed away in the, it would have been, 1990, around there. My next sister, she had heart, very bad heart. Everybody in my family has heart conditions.
Yeah, my family's plague as well.
Yeah, both my parents died of heart problems, and in those days, Dad died in 49. We were still four of us in school when Dad passed away, and he was only 49. Mom passed away when she was 73. But no, it's Pat was my second oldest, Patricia. And she worked at Hunter's Garage when it was downtown, in that spot that I wish they would do something with. And she moved away after she got married. I was the next, and I'll just go through the rest of the family and then give you my background. My next brother was Dale. And he was, I always say he was the good looking one in the family. He was, he worked, never lived in Athabasca after he finished school, but he lived in either BC or Alberta, so he was back an awful lot. He was killed in a car accident a month after my first husband passed away. He was, he bought the bulk dealership down in Vulcan. He had three daughters, and they'd been up in the Peace River country, and they were in high school. They thought it would be better for them to be living where they could get more education and things, and they'd moved down there. They'd only been there for a couple of years, I think, and he was coming back from a meeting in Calgary, and a truck full of grain came out of an intersection. We went through an intersection and didn't stop and hit him. That was terrible.
Yes.
And then Danny, the baby of the family, that we just all spoiled terribly. We thought and I don't know how he turned out to be a very Dan Galloway. You might have known him. He came back to Athabasca and was very influential here. He was mayor of the village of that he lived down out of Baptiste Lake. He came back here after he retired, and he was president of the seniors over there, helped build it and get it going, and worked there a lot. And he died of a heart just a little over a year and a half ago.
Yes.
That's my brothers and sisters. I finished my school here in Athabasca, and I could not wait. I thought my life would begin when I left Athabasca. I couldn't wait to get out of here. And I worked in Edmonton for a while. I didn't really like it in an office. I was working for an insurance company. And I had a friend who was going to join the Air Force. So we both joined the Air Force. And I didn't tell my mother till after I'd done it, because I think I might have had a little, we would have had a few conversations about that. But anyway, it worked out fine. I was there in the Air Force for just only a couple of years. I was a telegraph operator.
Okay.
And I was stationed up in Whitehorse, because that was the time of the Cold War, mm-hmm. and we had to take down all the messages that the Russians were sending over the airwaves. It was all in code. It didn't mean anything to you, but and if it was in Russian, it still wouldn't have meant anything to us. But it was an interesting couple of years.
Okay.
And I'd been coming back to Athabasca off and on, and when I was in grade 12, there was a new teacher came to Athabasca, Tony Corbel. And he liked the grade 7, 8, that age group. He liked that group to work with best. So he'd been in the elementary school the year I took grade 12. And I remembered that the only thing I knew about him was that he had hand printed all the diplomas for the graduate. He was quite an artist, and he'd handmade all these. There were 20 of us graduation certificates, and I really didn't have anything, didn't know him other than Mr. Corbel, one of the teachers. And when I came back to Athabasca, I met him several times through some friends, anyway, we started to go out together, and we were married, and we had a son while we were living here in Athabasca, and then we went to Edmonton for a couple of years, and we bought a house there and got settled, and he had been in the Air Force during the war. He'd ridden his bike something like 40 miles from the school he was in, because he was 18, and you know, this was exciting. He wanted to do this, so I think he rode something huge distance, took him, and enlisted, and joined the Air Force, and he was a pilot, and he'd finished his training, and he was the war was just about over in Europe. So he was stationed at the Pat Bay Air Force Base on Vancouver Island, just outside of Victoria, and with the just waiting to be transferred to the war in Japan, which was still going on. And when then thank goodness that was ended. So he came back to teaching, and he finished his degree at once we moved to Edmonton, he went to university and there and finished his degree. And we'd only been in that house about 4 or 5 years, I think. My son was in grade 1, and we read about the exchange program that they had. So we applied for it, and we got an exchange with a teacher in Wales. So we went to Cardiff, Wales for a year and lived there, and he taught school, which was a wonderful experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I got my first car. We bought a small car over there.
Yeah.
And if we, you know, know, for traveling, and if we got it out of the country if before a year, and if we brought it into Canada after we'd had it a year, we didn't have to pay the duty on it. So we had this, it was cost, I think it was $1,300 or something without the tax. And we managed, and we were on the ocean. We came back by boat because we had to, mm-hmm. we flew over, but we came back on the Empress of Canada. It was a 1 year old ship. It was beautiful. And anyway, we had to come back by ship because we had the car. That was when I got my first car. That was my, it was just a small one, so that was my car, and I've had one ever since. it was a neat experience, just wonderful. We traveled, we had 3 months in the spring because they gave the exchange teachers an extra week so that they could take advantage of the exchange. So we spent 3 weeks on the continent traveled all around Scotland and England and Wales while we were through the year, and then we had another two or three weeks before we had to come back.
Nice.
So that was a wonderful experience. Mm-hmm. And we'd sold our house, so we bought another one, and we were only there for 5 years, and we decided to move to Vancouver Island. He'd applied for a job there, and he got there. So we went to Vancouver Island, and I went to university there, to the University of Victoria, and I got my degree in education. So I spent the next 18 years teaching math in high school, which was a really good, I just loved it.
Yeah.
Just a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
Good
for you.
It was well worth it.
How many women math teachers were there then?
Well, that was a very interesting part. That was the beginning of the women's revolution, sort of that first couple of years, I'm not a very firm, not very aggressive or anything, but I can remember the first, when I first went to the math science was one department,
yeah.
We had a meeting every month, and the first meeting I went to, the head of the department said, and Jimmy, can I get you to keep the minutes? And I said, oh, I don't think so. I said, I didn't. That's not necessarily a woman's job. I'm sure I said it a little more strongly than that, but
yeah.
Anyway, it was very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting, I can tell you.
Were you treated well?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Lots
of
respect.
Yes, yeah. And I got a lot. I did some practice teaching with, when I was at the university, with younger grades, but I just didn't. I had a much better rapport with the teenage kids, and I had no trouble. And that was a rebellious time for teenagers too. There were
yes.
a lot of problems,
yeah.
But I got along fine with them, and you had to be firm. But I had a few jokes pulled on me.
What years again are we talking about here?
I started teaching in probably late 60s.
Late 60s.
And yeah.
Math, yeah, at high schools.
Yeah, yeah. I was talking today about, they were talking about some kid in his long hair. And then that was such an issue at that time, just a terrible issue. We had this one boy in grade 11, I think he was, blonde, and had really long hair, very nice, neat, but he wore his hair long. And there was a military base still at the Pat Bay, where my husband had been stationed, a small one. And anyway, his father was in charge of it. I don't know if they called it. It was so small, I don't know if he was called the commander or what it was. But anyway, his father was the military, and he was in charge of it, and very, very gung-ho military type. And he had two older brothers, and they were just like their dad, you know, military haircuts and all the rest of it. And this poor kid came home from school one day. They'd been after him to get his hair cut. And the brothers grabbed him and held him down on the floor, and his dad cut his hair off. Not well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that that's still, I don't know what that kid turned out like, but that would be a terrible experience for a boy. I just,
it would be, yeah.
Yeah, there were issues. There were a lot of issues. There were a lot of problems for the, I think the kids today somehow are more adjusted to their, what's going on in their lives than kids were at that age. It was a terrible time for some of them to, they didn't believe in the norms that, you know, there was a sort of an awakening of kids, of a beginning of independence. A lot of strikes. I don't know, you maybe don't remember them, but my one fear was when I started university that there wouldn't be any university around to finish because they were, you know, they did, some of them would take over at class and they'd throw the type. I remember reading about universities where they were throwing all the equipment out the, you know, windows of upper floors and things and ruining it. And it was, and there was always protests somewhere. Always protests somewhere.
That was in the era when our unions
yes.
were developing.
And the I can remember a girl at university one day came up to me and said, "Oh, are you going to the border? Are you going to the protest on Saturday?" And I said, "Where is it?" And she said, "Oh, it's at the border, because with the United States there was a." But to get to that, you had to take a 2-hour ferry trip from Vancouver Island to get to the mainland, and then probably half an hour, maybe 3/4, to the border crossing to go to a protest. I said, "What are you protesting about?" She says, "Well, I don't know, but it'll be fun."
Okay.
And I mean, it was the in thing to do at that time.
Protest.
It was the beginning of getting some freedom and being away from home and making your own decisions too made a big difference. But that was quite interesting. Really. But students they can have a lot of power. This shooting that happened down in the States, I'm really hopeful about the attitude of those people. I hope they continue that, because I don't know if you remember, but in that same period somewhere, the war in Vietnam was on and was so unpopular in the States, and there were protests all the time down there about this war, which there probably should have been. And there was a protest at a university, and I can't remember where it was, but they called in the National Guard and they shot 18 American students. And that was, I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if that had some effect on ending the war. That's what they were protesting. But it was a terrible thing. And they recognized that it was a terrible thing. But, you know, to shoot their own, to be ordered, somebody had to give the order, so they, to American students, that was just, I think by the time they get to university, hopefully they know what they're doing. But anyway, I've got way off the topic. But, I think that just pretty well covers just about what I had. You asked me some questions that I didn't have anything down about.
Sorry.
But
speaking on that last conversation about the guns, what were the gun laws like back in the, when you were growing up? Was your grandfather, was he able to, your parents, were they able to display their firearms in their homes, or was everything locked up?
Oh, I don't think it would have been locked up. Mm-hmm. I'm sure,
but you
I mean,
town.
To be honest, I don't know of Granddad having any guns.
Okay.
I actually don't remember him. He died when I was about six. I have one vague memory of I think might have been him sitting on his knee. But my dad was a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But any people that had guns were hunters. And in those days, hunting was, you know, a valuable source of meat supply. I remember we had the local creamery. We had, this would be before people had freezers in their homes, and the local meat market used to have, you could rent a freezer and they would butcher deer or whatever and put there. And I remember when I was growing up, came back to Athabasca one weekend, and I'd had my, shut the car door in my finger, and it was so painful. And I'd gone to see Dr. Wright to get the, he just pierced it to get some of the pressure off, and it was fine. But he was talking to me, and he said, you know, he was talking about when I was born, and he said, you spoiled a good hunting trip. He said, your dad and I were supposed to go hunting that weekend. Anyway, that was... No, I don't... Dad had guns, but they were... He kept them over in the elevator. They were never in the house.
Never in the house?
No,
okay.
He never kept his... And it was just hunting guns.
Was the hunting good?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And
did you eat much wild meat yourself?
Not a lot. Deer. We used to have deer meat, and Mom was a wonderful cook. She knew how, because you know some wild game has to be treated differently.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, it was. We all enjoyed it, and he'd go hunting for birds in the fall too. We'd have
chickens.
Prairie chickens. And I mean, that's, I think that was very common. I think everybody did that pretty well. And I think in the States, it was much like that at that time. It's just that that silly business that they've got now has just grown. That's fairly recent. And it's gun manufacturers push it through the NRA And what worries me is I saw them interviewing somebody on TV about the gun clubs in Canada that they have. And he talked just like the NRA talks down there, you know, about how it's no harm. And you know, to me, that's the thin edge of the wedge. They've started on this. And I don't think anybody eats wild game anymore.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yes. My husband is an avid hunter
has
a trap line.
Yeah.
And,
oh, that's...
And speaking
yeah.
of which, since we're on this topic, when you grew up around here, were you ever exposed to the trappers who were coming in on the river, taking their travel up to the Hudson's
no,
Bay?
No, but I remember the store. What was his name? It used to be the Sears store. And it's the warehouse, is it, where they have the
warehouse
one
now?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That used to be Burkett, Hans Burkett.
Okay.
And he was the trader, fur trader, and they'd bring their furs to him. And his wife kept it up after he died, and she just passed away a few years ago in the lodge.
Oh, okay.
And I guess she did. She was wonderful. She looked after, look after business for these fur trappers and things.
When did she enter business here in the trapping, or in the sale of and registering?
Oh,
fur?
It was while I was living at the coast. It was when my first husband was still alive. So it would have been before he passed away in 78, I think it was. Because Mom got each of us bought each of us, she brought bought my brothers a pair of leather gauntlets with the Indian beadwork on
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
And
nice.
She bought the girls slippers that had, you know, and because I remember, the reason I remember my first husband was still alive, he said those have to go out in the garage. He couldn't stand the smell of them. I liked the smell,
yeah.
but he didn't want them in the closet. Anyway, yeah, I gave them to my, I've got a couple of grandnephews that I gave them to, and I said, these are, hang on to these, they're
mm-hmm.
interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a no. dying art, but
yeah.
they're beautiful. I have a couple pair myself.
Yeah, they are. No, it's, there's still a trap, what's his name? I didn't know him. Their house burned down, an old couple, both of them little short people. Oh, what the dickens is there? Anyway, he's always been gone out
trapping.
And he, I don't know if he is now. I doubt if he is now, because he's probably my age. And
the last name be Olsen's?
Pardon?
Would the last name be Olsen's?
No.
No, okay.
I thought it was delightful about, oh, it must have been about 10 years ago or something. It was after I'd come here, and my sister-in-law was telling me that his kids had bought him a snowmobile with a starter or something.
Electric
starter. Because he was still going out. And even a few years ago, I remember he was still going out on the trap line.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I don't know if he did it because he had to or just because he loved it, but I think he loved it. That was,
oh.
yeah. Anyway, the
yeah. My husband still has a very active trap line north of Fort McMurray,
oh,
so I understand
good.
The love
I'm
of
glad,
it.
I didn't know that, I didn't realize that there was still, there may still be people doing it around here.
There are, I've met a few. There
oh, okay.
is an active trappers association here in Athabasca
oh,
still.
Is there?
And I was just wondering, you know, like when you talk about the trappers coming into Athabasca, you remember this when you were little?
Yeah.
Yeah, right up until about the 70s, you say, is when the
yeah,
trapping office
I think it would be around then somewhere, yeah.
So by golly, you know, it stayed here for, what, 75 years or
yeah.
100 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. No, it was, yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was talking about Tony and I. We came back here, then we moved to the coast, and... I guess that was, I think I'd pretty well finished that. He passed away in 70.
Here in Athabasca.
No, it wasn't 70. It was the 80s. No, this was on the island.
On the island, okay.
He'd come back to Edmonton. His brother had passed away, so he'd flown back for the funeral. And he had a brain aneurysm. And he was in the university hospital for about 6 weeks. I came back and stayed at my brother's, and then they flew him to, and he lived for about 2 years after that, and then he had a stroke and passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When did you move back to Athabasca?
Well, my second husband and I, we got married about 3 or 4 years after Tony passed away.
When was that?
We'd both just retired.
Okay.
And I had known his wife before. I'd met him a couple of times, but I didn't really know him that well.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife and I had been good friends. And I had retired the same time she had surgery for lung cancer. And she had, when they'd operated, they had cut some inadvertently it was but she was not able to walk, she had to use a wheelchair.
Okay, yeah.
So she, I mean, we'd been good friends, but we'd both been busy, she'd been working and I'd been working, and we didn't spend a lot of time together. But after she got out of the hospital, we started, oh, we go out for lunch once a week, and we go downtown shopping and things
yeah.
like that, you know. So we saw a lot of each other. and mostly just the two of us. And then Lynn and I saw more of each other afterwards. And he'd been in the Navy, and he retired about a month before we got married. That was it. And I lived at Arbutus Ridge. After my first husband passed away, after a couple of years, I'd sold the house we had, which I'm sorry I did. If it was still there, I'd be living in it today.
Me too.
It was one of those, you know, we've lived in a lot of places, but this was the most comfortable.
Yeah.
This house just fit. Mm. Anyway, and it was also about as far from as our lawn down here. It was about the backyard lawn, and then I had the ocean the other side of that.
Nice.
That was down a bit of a hill, but
yeah,
it was a gorgeous place, and we lived there for almost 20 years, so we fixed it up and done things to it, and it was a very comfortable house. But anyway, I needed a new life, so I sold it, and I moved to a new gated community. For you had to be 55 to get in there, and I was 58. And
this is mid-70s.
It's in the 70s. No, just a minute. I'm 80. Yeah. No, it'd be later than that. It would have been in the 80s.
80s, okay.
Yeah. And it was a gated community around a golf course. Nice homes and the ocean, a lot of ocean views. And anyway, I bought a house in there, and Lynn and I started going out together and decided to get married. And he was a golfer, a good golfer.
Yeah.
I had just retired, so I never had time to do these things. I was taking bridge lessons, I was taking golfing lessons, I was going to learn how to play. And when I was taking piano lessons, I was learning how to. I did that when my. By the way, that's a wonderful therapy thing.
Yeah.
I did that. I bought a piano about 4 or 5 months after Tony passed away, and it just took over my life. I was a grade 6 after 3 years. I had a good music teacher, and anyway, I had time, and it was a great therapy thing. Anyway, when after we got married, I was taking golf lessons, and we were now golfing as a couple. So, you know, he had friends that golfed, and we had friends. Made friends at the Ridge, that was what we called this place, and they almost all of them were up there because of the golf course, of course, so it wasn't long till I was playing more golf than piano, and we would go down. We started going down to Arizona for the winter, and I couldn't believe when I came back how 6 months of not playing, how stiff you, how, you know, when you play all the time, how limber your muscles are.
Yeah.
I'd come back and I could hardly move my hand. So the piano soon went by the wayside, and we just golfed. We golfed at our golf course there, which was a lovely golf course, and then we would golf down south. And it was a great thing for holidays. You know, we'd go. Take our time going down. If you stopped at a place and they had a nice golf course, you might go. And if you really liked it, you might stay an extra day and golf it again. You know, so
yeah.
And we did good friends that I still keep in touch with that we golfed with, and it was a great way of life.
How many friends of yours are your age now and are still alive? People you golfed with in the 80s?
There's
season.
Still quite a few of them at Arbutus Ridge. They're not all living. That's the place where that was the name of our settlement. They're not all living right there. Some of them have retired now to assisted living,
okay.
Or just the those homes where they are, those condos where they provide meals.
Yeah.
Th- Those are very popular, and there's a lot of them in Sydney. That's where my first house was, the one that I loved.
Yeah.
And when I go out every fall for a visit, and when I went out last year, I looked at condos there with the idea of maybe I'll, this was after my brother had passed away, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll go back there. And I realized that all the friends out there are either older than me or close to the same age, so, you know, it just wasn't the right thing. And I couldn't stand another move.
No. Okay. So you're really quite happy retiring here?
Yes. Yeah.
No. That's great. And still got everything you need here.
Yeah. I mean, I moved here, it was because we had to. My second husband had a stroke, and we had a big house out at the lake, and
mm-hmm.
the yard was a lot of work, and he wasn't able to do any of it. And it was just, I did it for about 3 or 4 years, and I couldn't even hire people to come and work because nobody wanted to go out there.
That's right, to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we decided that it was time to move in, and I moved here because I had to. I didn't really like it, but I just love it now. I really do. It was a wise move to make, and I'll stay here as long as I can.
Yeah.
And
well, you're in awesome condition for your age. You're 85, you said.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
No, that's wonderful. You're 30 years older than me right now. Okay?
Oh.
Yeah. And you look like you're probably as limber and agile as I feel myself.
Oh, I'm not. I really don't get a. I'm finding it hard to do things. More. I had open heart surgery about seven years ago, something like that. And they didn't expect me to live. They gave me the option of having the surgery or not having it because they were afraid it wasn't going to be successful. Which sounds awful, but at the time it just, you know, that's the way it is. I decided to have it, and I only have, I've only got 3 ventricles that work. One of them is completely gone.
Okay.
And I've since had to go back and have some stents in. So because I only have the 3, I don't have, I have about 60% of the stamina I should have for my age.
Okay.
So I don't get it. I tire out easily, or, you know, I don't do much physical work.
No.
I should. But I have a cleaning lady once every 2 weeks who's very good, and I can manage the rest of all the rest of it. But I wear out easily.
Okay.
You do the best you can with what you've got.
Yeah, you do.
And it gets you through, and you, yeah.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to ask, Ashley, do you have any words of wisdom for other people to live to be the age of 85 and look as happy as you look? You've got a smile on your face. You look content.
Yeah, I am. I am.
What's the secret to your inner happiness?
I think it's the upbringing I had.
Okay.
You know,
a wonderful childhood.
Yeah, that's
lots
right.
Of freedom.
I really believe I grew up in the best of times.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. It was, there was very little social pressures. Like in the small community like Athabasca, everybody was the same.
It was just,
I mean, some people may have been wealthier than others, but to be honest, we weren't aware of it.
No.
Never thought of it.
No.
And I was lucky. My first husband was just a wonderful man. And we kind of, we were both fairly young, so we kind of grew together to be, you know,
best of friends.
Yeah. So, it's.
You mentioned playing music in the past, learning piano was a therapeutic way of you dealing with what, the loss of your first husband.
Yeah.
And,
I actually hadn't, when I bought it, I didn't think of it as therapy. But he was also a school teacher, and he'd had high blood pressure, and we had decided that he was going to retire the next year and I was going to teach for a few more years, and then we would both retire. But One of the things I was going to do when I retired was learn to play the piano, but I never gave it another thought. And it was about a year... It wasn't that long. It was maybe about 6 months after he passed away. And there was a teacher's convention in Victoria, and my friends and I were going to have lunch. And we walked by this music store, and there was a piano in the window, and I looked at it and said, I'm going to buy that. So that was a Friday. Saturday, I went down and looked at it and bought the piano and arranged for a music teacher. And she came to the house, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was a middle-aged woman, I guess, and a very good teacher. No, that was great. I actually thought of it after... Len passed away, and I was managing, and I just never really thought about it again. And then just a few weeks ago, I was thinking, but I knit for the lodge.
Yes.
And that January, when I said I wasn't out of the house twice except to go to the doctor's, I don't stay in bed all day. I get up and I knit 10 pairs of socks for I gave to Bernadette for. I knit them for the lodge, and they sell them up there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if that and playing Sudoku keep me busy for off times.
Okay. And thank you for your time today, Wilma.
Oh, it's actually been a pleasure. I was kind of dreading it because I didn't know.
No, hearing your stories is wonderful.